would say no. I think if there were changes, they happened later.
At the time he was gunned down, he had evidence, he claimed, of the use of Russian troops in the war in Ukraine.
Live from downtown Chicago, it's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
There is no real American or Western equivalent of this. The number one political enemy, at least by way of speaking out, of Vladimir Putin was murdered this weekend prior to a scheduled big Sunday rally, this coming just a month or two after he said, "I'm afraid I could be killed by Vladimir Putin's people." Micah Halpern joins us now, at Micah Halpern, M-I-C-A-H-H-A-L-P-E-R-N. And if you Google that, you'll get all things Micah, and he's a very busy guy. Micah, good morning. Let's start with this. Tell us about this gentleman that was murdered, and I mean, why wouldn't we suspect it was Putin?
Well, his name is Boris Nemtsov, and he was a leading opponent to Putin's perspective. Now, more pro-Western, certainly was rejectionist of Russian involvement in Ukraine. And so this was a thorn in the side, there's no question, of Putin. But there's so many different theories and conspiracy theories as to how and who was behind the murder. It's unbelievable. One has to realize that the murder actually took place a stone's throw from the Kremlin, one of the most secure place in all of Moscow. And it's we have some picture footage of, you know, the car driving off without a license plate. I mean, it's like unbelievable when you think about it. It's right out of a movie, right out of Stephen King, a novel or something.
And hiding in plain sight seems to be another way that could possibly be covered up here, because the thing that we lose sight of here, we have a lot of reason not to trust Mr. Putin, but because of the propaganda machine in Russia and the way he has played out the Ukraine movement, he is still a popular figure in country, isn't he?
Oh, more than popular, right, exactly. There was a divisiveness, there's a question, and he is part of that division. And the divisiveness that is created by him, but he's very, very popular because of his populist nature. That is, he reduces things to simplicity, black and white instead of gray. And most foreign policy is gray. Most issues are gray in politics. If you can make it simple, people can, in general, join your forces. And that's exactly what he does. So he's got that. And people love him for it. And the people who don't really are targeted in a lot of different ways. It's a very sad reality when your opponents, even for him, when your opponents are killed on your doorstep, or murdered, executed on your doorstep. And that is not a good situation for him in general, because it shows some real serious questions, if it at all blows back on him. And it does. People are asking, do you think he had something to do with it? If it did, where's the transparency? Where's the power? Where's the leadership? What's going on here? You can't just get rid of your opponents that way.
And the idea that he would be conducting the investigation, or it'd be an investigation by his people, is just it's just laughable.
Yeah, that's a difficult thing in general. And that's the nature of certain governments and certain societies. That I wouldn't have expected anything else.
Right.
He's not going to hand it over to an international community. And he's not going to hand it over. I mean, I wouldn't have expected. I would expect some sort of senior, retired, thoughtful, and independent kind of character, maybe. But that's the nature of Russia right now. And you're not going to. That would be pushing too much.
And doesn't it speak to the growing megalomania of this guy that he would then make this move if, in fact, it was him? Because if it wasn't him, you have to assume it was someone who had a problem with Boris, who figured we can take care of Boris and make it look like it's Putin, because he would be suspected of all of it, and it's a win-win for our side.
Right. I mean, that's entirely a possible issue. Some are saying maybe it's the Ukrainian connection, also because of the anti-Ukrainian point of view of Nemtsov, which is very, very probable. And then you place the blame, of course, on Putin, which happens. And I can see all that stuff happening. It does not look good for Putin that this has happened. Now, on the megalomanian side, you got to say, you know, is it possible that one could have a larger ego than this guy already has? Is it possible? Yes.
It right.
Continues to grow. The power continues to grow, as does the tremendous, tremendous wealth, and which is just mind-boggling in terms of what's going on. The people in power have tremendous wealth in that part of the world right now. And so the oligarchs, as they're called. And it's very important to see that also.
And do you have to be a billionaire to be an oligarch, or can you be a 100 millionaire?
Yes. No, you've got to be a billionaire.
Okay, just curious.
That extra zero means something.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Zero means nothing. It means something.
Listen, the rest of us are nobody. We're not even a gark. So Netanyahu is coming at the invitation of Speaker of the House John Boehner and the Republicans in the House of Representatives. This has been controversial for months. The public is just really catching on to how big a deal this has become. He turned down an invitation to speak to the Senate as well. There are elections in Israel in days, so it's a big deal in Israel. Obviously, there's been big problems between President Obama and Netanyahu. So this is kind of a hot mess. Where do you fall on this?
Well, here's what I have to say. It's really very the reality is that that Netanyahu sees a real threat coming out of Iran. So does the United States, and certainly so does Congress. And Netanyahu's point is to say, if I have to jeopardize warm relations with the White House in order to keep my country safer, I'm going to do that. And he's speaking to not Congress, he's speaking to the American people to sort of say a bad deal is worse than no deal. And that's going to be an expression he's going to use. He's going to use expressions like the only two countries in the world that really bear this brunt is the United States and Israel. And we're linked, inextricably, in the battle against good versus evil, against ISIS, against all these kinds of things. And he's going to draw on all these issues, and he's going to say, Iran is not doing well here. If you can't trust them before this point, when they signed the other treaties and we're not able to investigate and inspect, what makes you think that after we sign another treaty, that's going to happen? And so Netanyahu is going to say, you could sign a treaty, but we're the ones who are going to pay the price, he's going to say, if it fails. And that's a price that he can't afford to lose.
What do you make of the whole political showdown aspect of this? The fact that Speaker Boehner invited Netanyahu, didn't inform the president. This was all kind of conducted behind the president's back. What do we need to make of that?
Well, I think that that's inside of baseball, actually. It's not, it's interesting because Netanyahu is the baseball.
Right.
It is inside of baseball. In other words, it's an issue between the Republicans and the Democrats. Netanyahu is not coming here to talk to the Democrats or the Republicans. He's coming here to talk to America. And it's a big issue. It's an American issue. Boehner made a faux pas. Maybe it was deliberate. Maybe it wasn't a faux pas. But the reality is that the need in this issue is bigger than simply parties here. And that's got to be the message. If I were writing a speech, if I were crafting a speech, that's what I'd be talking about. This is not about party politics. This is about the safety of the world.
And do you
the
make
only power, and the only power that can really step in here is the United States.
And do you make anything of the story over the weekend that the Israelis were preparing to bomb the Iranian nuclear development sites? The president threatened to defend that, to stop that from happening, even militarily stop that. What do you make of that report?
Yes. Yeah, this is not the first time. Over the last few years, there have been numerous attempted plans for Israel to go, and even under the Bush administration. And so what they have is what's called the yellow light, not the green light, so to speak. So you get the green light, you can't really go. And so the idea is that the United States is not in favor of an action against Iran right now. I would say that it's interesting that this gets leaked because that's a part of the pressure that's placed on Iran. We can't control Israel. You've got to come to a real agreement because they're on a hair trigger and they might go off without our permission, so to speak.
And does
so
this
important fulcrum that's weight, which is added in terms of the pressure, in terms of negotiation, Israel used as a pressure point on Iran.
And does this speech, the trip to America by Netanyahu, does it help his election or hurt it?
I can't speak to that issue. It really, I would say though, it's interesting because it goes, but it cuts both ways. There are people who are really against it, and there are people who are for it.
Mm-hmm.
I can say that. Being standing up against the president in the failed Middle East policy in Israel is a very, very positive element in terms of people do not see the administration in Washington as having had a positive outlook into the Middle East, especially in terms of Iran. That said, had he embraced, had the White House embraced Obama, I mean, embraced Netanyahu, it may have indeed been the kiss of death for him politically.
Sure. So follow Micah Halpern. Follow Micah Halpern on Twitter, at Micah Halpern, M-I-C-A-H-H-A-L-P-E-R-N. Google that. Get everything that Micah's up to lately. And as always, thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure. Have a good day. Stay warm.
You as well. Well, that's not going to happen. He was right about everything right up into that comment.
Then he made the stupid comment.
Then he
right?
said, yeah, Mr. Wise Guy, stay warm.